is the Burakis.
Mama's going to tan your hide for this, she hissed, her fingernails digging into the soft skin of my wrists. She's gonna have to catch me first.
I drove my knee into her stomach before she could get us both killed.
I untangled myself from her coughing shape and rushed to my feet. A half dozen more women had entered the iron ring while we'd been scuffling like this was the schoolyard. They were keeping their distance. The Burakis' hooves were starting to sink back down in the sand. Much longer, and it managed to go back to its immortal form and become part of the desert. I whistled. It spun. For a few long heartbeats, we faced each other. I took one step, then another. Two more. It still hadn't moved. All at once, Syra dove for it, gripping a fistful of iron. The Buraki darted out of her way, and then it charged me. I made myself hold my ground, like I was facing down Jin's bullet again. I wasn't going to die today, not even now with the Buraki's hooves cutting through the sand and its weight bearing down on me. I danced out of the way a moment before it reached me. I put out my hand, holding the nail. My skin skimmed its hide, then went flat against its flank. Iron and skin. The Buraki's scream was the sound of something being torn, and I felt it deep in my gut. I moved with the immortal beast as it furiously struggled. I moved with it, fighting to keep skin against spirit. I saw the anguish in its face. It didn't want to be trapped. I understood that. Neither did I. The nail dropped from my hand, but it didn't matter. My hands wrapped around its neck as it turned to muscle. The world seemed to drop away as the Buraki panted against my chest. Sun and sand became flesh and blood below my fingers. I felt the strength of it below me, old as the world, older than death and darkness and sin. All I'd have to do was climb on its back and let it carry me to the end of the desert. The Buraki cried out, and my thoughts scattered as the scream made something tear loose inside me. Someone shoved me back as men swarmed the beast with my uncle at the forefront. My chance to run was gone. The Buraki whinnied weakly as an iron bit was shoved between its teeth, and nails and horseshoes were hammered to its feet. Three iron shoes, enough iron to anchor it to its physical form permanently, and one bronze to make it obedient. Men were shouting to send word that we had a Buraki. Onlookers were whooping and laughing. Kids were clapping their hands. I was already forgotten. The beast tossed its head, looking at me like I'd betrayed it. I had blood in my hair and on my clothes. No, I wasn't letting it get taken away that easily. I started pushing through the crowd before I could think better of it. Someone grabbed my arm and wrenched me sideways between two houses. A hand covered my mouth, keeping in my shout. "Well, hello there." A nasty voice slithered into my ear. "Little Miss Bandit."
Chapter 6. God damn it, Fazim.
I shoved him away. I guess he made it out alive from the pistol pit after all. And he'd called me Bandit. He knew.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Fazim let me go, stuffing his hands into his pockets. He took two steps away from me to the edge of the shadows between the two houses. He didn't need to guard me all that close. We both knew I didn't have anywhere to run.
Do you always drag girls behind your house to beat them up for putting a knee in your sweetheart's gut?
I leaned back against the weak wooden frame.
Marry me.
He said it so suddenly, for a second I just stared at him with my jaw still moving.
Then I burst out laughing. I couldn't help it. He looked so damn pleased with himself, like he really expected me to say yes. Well, paint me purple and call me a genie, if that isn't the dumbest thing I've heard all day. I shoved bloody hair off my face. He was still grinning. You've got nice eyes, you know. There was someone else with eyes like yours out in Deadshot last night. Blue-eyed Bandit, they called him. Got me thinking. Not many people in this desert with eyes like that. Of all the times for him to grow some brains. You saying I've got a long-lost brother? You know what I'm saying, Amani. He stepped toward me, and I fought everything in me telling me to step back. Only a few feet away, the commotion over the Buraki was still making a racket, but just then it felt like the world had narrowed to Fazim and me. And you're going to marry me so that no one else finds out. And what's the next part? My eyes darted to the opening between the two houses. I saw a flash of colorful kalat as someone rushed by. I willed the next person to look our way. You tell me you're in love with me and these months with Shira have been a big ruse while you were waiting for my mother to be dead a year? Fazim grinned, like he'd just been waiting for me to ask. Well, until you caught that Buraki, Shira was my best shot in town to get me on the way to Rich. And she'll get you even further that way once my uncle sells it. Was that why Shira had flung herself into the fray? To get this idiot to marry her for love or money? See, I've thought it all out, though. He tapped his head. He was pretty dumb to be acting like he was the smartest man ever born. Sure, if I marry Shira, I'd get a little bit of that money. But seeing as you caught it, if you were to get married, the Buraki wouldn't belong to your uncle no more. It would belong to my husband. Damn him. He wasn't clever, but he was right. And worse, he was serious. Here was the moment I'd been trying to outrun, only it wasn't coming at my uncle's hand. Anger burned my fear straight out of me. I'd rather shoot myself. I'd rather shoot you. You wouldn't have to. He was still smiling, his teeth looking too big for his handsome face. The army will probably do it for you, once I tell them you were with that foreigner thereafter. His gaze stripped me all the way from my blue eyes to my boots. Of course, they'll probably torture you first. I smiled at him sweetly instead of knocking his teeth in. Still sounds better than a lifetime married to you. Fazim's hand slammed into the wall behind my head, scaring the smirk straight off me. You know, I don't have to wed you first. His voice was low, his smile still fixed, like he thought he was charming me. I can make you worthless. Then you'd have no choice. You could marry me or hang. If you're anything like your mama, you've got a fine neck for hanging. His free hand traced a line along my throat. I could best just about any man in this desert if I had a gun. But now I was unarmed and helpless. Fazim? Shira's voice saved me. What are you doing? Fazim pulled away, just far enough for me to see Shira standing in the narrow opening between the two houses. Her mouth was pressed together in that way I remembered from when we were little, when she was trying not to cry. I pulled away from him and scrambled back toward the street. My pace slowed just as I passed Shira. I thought she might stop me, stick an arm out and demand to know what I was doing between a wall and her lover. But she stepped aside at the last moment, her eyes firmly fixed on the ground. I bolted for home. I had to leave. Bluffing took more brains than Fazim had. He'd go to the army and tell them I knew about their traitor. I wasn't going to beg Jin. I was going to make him take me with him. I paused in the doorway into my uncle's house, listening for any noise that might mean I wasn't the first one to get back to the house. When I was sure, I stepped inside, letting the floorboards creak below my boots, praying this would be the last time I ever walked over that threshold. I snatched up everything I could find that I thought might belong to me from the chaos of the bedroom floor, and a few things I knew didn't. I dashed into the boys' room. It was even worse than ours, with clothes piled halfway up the walls. I grabbed a shirt that seemed as clean as anything got around there. Across the house, the front door banged open. I heard Aunt Farah call my name. I slung the shirt around my neck as I eased myself through the window, dropping to the sand below before she could think to check the boys' room. The main street was busy with folks hanging lanterns, setting out tables of food to sell, and tuning their instruments in the last dredges of daylight. We'd had nothing to celebrate since Shihabian, the longest night of the year, when we remembered the time the Destroyer of Worlds brought darkness and celebrated the returning of the light. That had been near a year ago now. The last county was thirsty for celebration. There would be plenty tonight. I just wouldn't be here for it. Nobody noticed when I slipped into the store, shutting the door on the noise of the street. As soon as I did, I knew it was too quiet. The floorboards creaked under my feet as I took a step into the shop. Dust motes danced between the shelves. "Jin?" I whispered into the shop. I felt stupid just for saying it. I was too late. He had gone. I didn't know why I'd figured he would stay. The shirt hung loose in my fingers. It was stupid of me to think he would help me anyway. He didn't owe me anything. Besides, this was the desert. Everybody looked out for himself. For one wild moment, I considered running to the young commander. I could sell Jin out to them before Fazim sold me out. No. I shook the thought off as soon as it came. I'd never be traitor enough to go to the army. I shoved the shirt in my bag. I'd just have to find another way out of town before they got to me. The sun had finished setting by the time I made my way back out of the store, and Dustwalk was lit for celebration. Small oil lanterns strung between houses and torches burning in the street lit up the sorry spectacle. What was left of our food was laid on tables to sell, but liquor was flowing freely as folks wove through the music and sang along. I gave it another few drinks before someone got into a fight. Half of last county was here by now, come to see the Buraki, which was tethered in the center of town, tossing its head angrily. Uncle Asid was trying to soothe it, but the immortal beast was getting more and more worked up with the crush of bodies jostling to touch it. Finally, my uncle started to lead it away from where it might kick a person's head in. I kept one eye on it and the other out for Fazim as I pushed through the crowd, dodging dancers and drunks. Something whacked hard into my ankles, shooting pain up my leg. I kicked back without thinking and turned to see Tamid standing just out of reach in the crush of people, propped on his crutch and looking all innocent, like he hadn't just hit me with it. "Come on now. You're not going to kick a cripple, are you?" he joked. I wanted to smile back, but I felt like someone had wrung me out. Tamid's own good mood flickered uncertainly. "Well, I've been looking for you." He stumbled over his words, making my heart swell. I was going to miss him like fire. I'd always known at the back of my mind there'd come a day when I'd leave and he'd stay behind, but I hadn't expected it to rush in on us so quickly. "Here." He pressed something into my hand. Seemed like you took a bit of a beating capturing that Buraki.
It was a small glass bottle with white powder pills bumping in the bottom. Pain pills.
The kind his father made his money from, selling them to factory workers who got hurt on the job, or when they shot each other to settle a fight.
It's the kind that knocks you out, isn't it?
I knew the medicines better than I'd like. I'd had enough lashings for my smart tongue in the last year.
I can't take it.
I tried to hand the pills back. I took a deep, shuddering breath.
I'm going to make a run for it on the Buraki. Want to come?
Tamid smiled gamely.
Sure. Where are we going?
He figured I was joking. I didn't answer. I just held up my bag for him to see.
It registered on his face slowly.
Amani?
There was an edge to the way he said my name, like he needed to have enough fear for the pair of us.
You're likely to get yourself hanged.
I'm just as likely to die here.
I pulled him aside, out of the crowd, next to the schoolhouse so we were out of the way. Wild recklessness had been building in my bones for hours, days, weeks, years, and it filled up too much of me to let in anything else just now. And they could do a whole lot worse than hang me. The truth came out in a rush as the celebrations carried on around us. Everything about my uncle, Jin and Fazim, and how Jin left without taking me with him. And how Fazim blackmailed me to wind up wed or dead if I stayed. And I sure as hell wasn't going to wed anyone. Not him. Not my uncle.
And in what part of this brilliantly thought-out plan were you going to tell me you were leaving?
He looked wounded.
I didn't think...
I swallowed hard against the guilt welling up. I hadn't really thought... That was the truth of it. There had been no time to think. No room to think about anything other than Fazim and getting away.
You weren't ever going to come, Tamid,
I said softly.
You're only going to try to make me stay, and I'm in too much trouble to stay.
You wouldn't be in trouble if you just stayed put, instead of running off to the pistol pit in the first place. Why didn't you talk to me? We could have figured something out together, you and I. Why do you always...
Tamid bit off his words in a breathy huff.
You always have to make things so difficult.
A long silence stretched out between us in place of the argument we'd had 100 times.
I know what to do.
Tamid wasn't looking at me.
In the shadow of the house, cast by the swinging lamplight, it was hard to read his expression.
I cast my eyes around nervously, keeping my eyes out for any sign of Fazim.
You could marry me.
That pulled my attention back.
What? Fazim can't do anything if you're already wed.
He looked so terribly earnest, it made me want to reach out to him.
I could keep you safe. From him. From the army. From your family. You wouldn't even have to live under Farah's roof anymore. I'd been figuring I'd ask your uncle anyway.
He couldn't quite meet my eyes. He looked faintly embarrassed.
Once you were a bit older... I didn't want to pounce as soon as your mother had been dead a year. I wanted to give you time. But I'd never let him wed you, Amani, if you'd told me. This would just mean asking him for you a bit sooner.
He'd been planning on asking to marry me? For how long?
The notion had never crossed my mind. I'd figured he'd always understood that I was planning on leaving. Or maybe he just thought I'd never make it. Tamid.
I lowered my voice, unsure of what to say. I didn't know how to explain what I wanted, not when our ideas were so at odds.
Fazim appeared through the crowd. He wasn't alone. Gold and white army uniforms trailed behind him, parting the crowd. My stomach leapt into my mouth as I plastered myself into the shadows. Tamid glanced over his shoulder. He saw what I did. When he turned back, he must have read my answer all over my face. I couldn't stay. He couldn't keep me safe.
Go.
Tamid.
I didn't want to leave with him angry at me, but he wasn't angry enough to want me dead.
Go.
For once, I did as I was told.
The street was thick with the crowds. I dodged around old Rafat, leaning heavily on his granddaughter's arm, and shoved past a stranger who was playing a sitar out of tune, before colliding with the side of my uncle's house. I was steps from the stables. If I could get to the Buraki...
There you are!
Aunt Farah yanked me around to face her. For the first time, the cold fury in her face didn't reach me. She was going to scream at me for my smart mouth, for knocking over her daughter, for not helping with dinner for all I knew. It might have mattered this morning, but I was long past caring now.
Let me go.
I tried to tug my arm free, but her grip tightened.
Where do you think you're going?
Away. I stopped struggling, facing her head on.
Out of this town and away from you. You don't want me here. You don't want your husband wanting me.
Her fingers dug in.
And I don't want your husband or anyone else having me.
I darted a look over my shoulder. Couldn't see anyone through the crowd. But it was a damn small town. Fazim would find me.
Just let me go, and I'll leave.
I turned back to Aunt Farah. The hatred that she usually wore had slipped. I was right, and she knew it. In this, we were allies.
Please.
Her fingers loosened. Too late. Uniform-clad arms clamped around me, and I was lifted off my feet with an involuntary cry. I was half-dragged back around the house into the street. The celebrations had quieted, revelry turning to panic as the army penned folks back against houses in a line. Soldiers marched down the street, lanterns held high, checking every man's face.
Search all the houses and see if he's there.
I recognized the clipped, careful accent of young Commander Naguib. He watched through our town like he owned the whole damn place. Jin was wanted for treason. As a mercenary, they claimed. They didn't send so many men to bring in traitors for pay. So either they weren't here for Jin, or he was a lot more than a mercenary. The soldier holding me dropped me in front of the young commander, who gave me a once-over before turning to Fazim over his shoulder.
This is her?
Yes. She was with the foreigner in Deadshot. The swinging lamplight made Fazim ugly as he hovered over the commander's shoulder. I'd been afraid before, but this was a new sort of terror.
She was working with him. She's the blue-eyed bandit.
A soldier snorted from the edge of the lamplight.
From the pistol pit? This girl?
He's an idiot.
I found my voice. I was trying to be brave, but it was Fazim's word against mine. They were going to believe a man over a girl any day. The commander grabbed my chin and held the lantern so close to my head, I figured he was going to burn me.
You have lovely eyes.
It was no use pretending anymore. I'd been betrayed by my own face.
Now where is our foreign friend?
If I knew that,
I wouldn't be here answering stupid questions. His hand connected with my cheek so hard, I was afraid that he'd snapped my neck, only I was too surprised to die. Pain echoed in my teeth and bones. "Where is he?" The commander's voice wormed its way through the ringing in my ears. I was only still standing because a soldier was holding me up. I struggled to find the ground again. The commander grabbed my chin.
"Tell me."
There was a gun at my temple.
"Or I will shoot you in the head."
My jaw hurt, but I made it work.
"Well, that wouldn't be real clever, because then you'd never get to hear what I've got to say."
The click of a bullet slotting into the chamber of a gun was a noise I knew like my own voice. I'd just never heard it so close to my ear.
"That's not going to work on her," Fazim spoke up. "If you really want to frighten her, you need her cripple."
Anger rushed in, pushing out my fear. I lunged at him so fast that the grip holding me slipped. I got my hands on his throat, but arms wrenched me off him before I could do much damage. Someone slapped me again. When my vision cleared, Tamid was kneeling on the sand in the circle of lamps. His bad leg was sprawled out crookedly, and a gun rested against the back of his neck. I hated Fazim, but I hated myself more. Tamid had warned me I'd get in trouble. I just hadn't figured on getting anyone in trouble with me.
"Now," the commander said in his fine accent, "would you care to tell us whether or not you were with our friend from the east in Deadshot?"
I swallowed angry words that rose up automatically. Mouthing off wasn't worth Tamid's life.
"I wasn't with him,"
I spoke through clenched teeth. "We were both there."
"And where is he now?"
"I don't know."
I thought he would hit me again, but the commander just pursed his mouth like he was disappointed in a bad student. He moved around to Tamid. I was suddenly afraid again.
"What happened to your leg?"
"Leave him alone."
Tamid and the commander both ignored me.
"It was twisted when I was born,"
Tamid answered cautiously.
We had an audience of about 24 soldiers and a few hundred last county folks. All of them were watching us with a mix of horror and fascination.
"Well then,"
the commander circled behind Tamid.
"It's hardly much good to you, is it?"
The bullet went straight through his knee. I screamed so loud I couldn't even hear Tamid's cry as he crumpled to the ground. A single shriek pierced through the sudden uproar. Tamid's mother.
Two soldiers were holding her back. "What do you think, bandit?"
Commander Naguib cried to me over the noise from the crowd.
"A man with one leg might as well have none for all the good he is."
He aimed his gun at Tamid's good leg.
"No!"
The cry ripped through me.
"Then tell me the truth, and tell me fast. Where is he?"
"I don't know,"
Tamid's mother screamed.
"No, no, I don't. He was here. He came here. Then he left."
"When?"
The commander came at me full stride, the simmering rage that lived under the cool face rising up again.
"Dusk, a few hours ago."
"Where did he go?"
"I don't know,"
I cried out. The gun smashed across my head. Blood erupted across my vision. I saw a burst of red and light before it cleared, and I could see the lantern swinging above my head again.
Where is he? The commander asked.
I don't know,
I repeated, because the truth was all I had now, as weak as it was. I will shoot him again, and this time it might not be in the leg.
I'm not lying. He didn't tell me. Why would he tell me?
I was shouting now.
Which way did he go?
I don't know.
Lying is a sin, you know.
The gun pressed against my cheek, hot metal in my face. And then the world exploded into noise and light.
Ringing. Everything was ringing. My first thought was that someone had been shot. Tamid?
I was face down on the ground. I pushed myself to my elbows. In the dark, all I could see was fire where I knew a cliff of black brick was supposed to be. The entire weapons factory was ablaze. Sound rushed back in. Screaming came first. The folks of Dustwalk had flung themselves to the ground in prayer, or just covered their heads. Some staggered to their feet, others just stared. Commander Naguib was already shouting instructions, Tamid and I forgotten. Soldiers were leaping onto their horses, riding full tilt toward the blaze.
Tamid.
He was crumpled on the sand, not moving, but as I called his name, he looked up at me. At the same moment, I heard his name again. His mother was cowering and weeping in the sand, trying to crawl toward him. Then I heard the unmistakable scream of a Buraki. The desert horse was barreling down the street toward us. On its back was Jin, riding straight toward me. Guns swiveled uncertainly in Jin's direction. He fired a shot, and a soldier went down. I turned back to where Tamid was crumpled. The Buraki was almost on top of me. I had seconds to decide. My legs were trapped, my gut tugging me recklessly toward Tamid, to near certain death. My heart tugging me to Jin and escape and the unknown. Jin leaned over the horse, reaching down. A gunshot went off at my feet. It wasn't a decision. More than a want, it was an instinct, a need. Staying alive. Jin's hand came into reach. I clasped it tight and swung my body as Jin pulled me up behind him. I saw Aunt Farah's ashen face. I saw Tamid crumpled in the sand. I saw Commander Naguib reloading his weapon. Defenseless. Young. It would be a clean shot. And Jin was armed. One shot, and the commander would be dead. Jin knew it, too. I felt it in the tension of his shoulders. Instead, he pulled the horse around, lowering his gun, and my hands twisted into Jin's shirt a second before the Buraki burst into the speed of a beast of wind and sand. Chapter 7
Tell me you drink.
I woke to rough cloth against my face and the smell of gunpowder in my nose. I dozed off with my head against Jin's back as we rode. His words vibrated through his shoulder blades and into my skull, jangling loosely until I put them together.
You've seen where I grew up.
My voice sounded scratchy. When I opened my eyes, all I could see was the weave of his shirt, but I could already tell we weren't anywhere near Dustwalk. The air tasted different, of cooler mornings and grit, instead of heat and dust and gunpowder.
Of course I drink.
My body ached, and my chest felt like something was clattering around in it. God knew I could use a drink or five right about now. Sometime while we rode, I'd wound my arms around Jin's waist to hang on. I let him go and wiped the sweat of my palms onto my own shirt as Jin slid from the saddle. I tried to line up my thoughts along with my spine as I forced myself straight. Wherever we were, it looked like most desert towns. Slapped together wooden houses and dusty ground. Only it was rockier than Dust Walk, and the horizon loomed close and high around us in the pre-dawn haze. We must have gone up into the mountains. I squinted up at a swinging signpost with a picture of a crudely drawn blue man with closed eyes. The lettering announced it as The Drunk Genie. I knew that story, but I couldn't remember it just now. The town was dead quiet. "Where are we?" I asked, only to realize Jin was gone. I twisted atop the Buraki and spotted him two houses down, hopping over a flaking white fence. A line of laundry was strung between the houses and a crooked post, and Jin snatched a piece of crimson cloth straight off it. My eyes traveled past him up the mountain beyond the houses. I answered my own question. Sazi was a full day's ride from Dustwalk, or a few hours as the Buraki ran. I'd heard so much about the mining town, but I'd never seen it. They said it was bad here after the mines collapsed a few weeks ago, but I still couldn't have imagined this. An explosion. An accident. Gunpowder gone wrong was the word in Dustwalk, and I'd figured I knew what they meant. I'd blown up bottles and tin cans along with all the other kids in the desert. I'd seen them shatter as we ran hollering for cover. Sometimes a kid would get a burned finger that needed to be sawed off, or a scarred chin. But most of the time, we just wound up with a mess of metal and glass and sand all melted up together. The collapsed mines looked a lot worse than a melted hunk of old tin. It reminded me of my father's body when they dragged him out of our house, his skin still smoldering. The mountain itself was disfigured, like the earth had rebelled from within its very soul and closed the mountain's ancient mouth, swallowing the mines whole. No wonder the army hadn't stayed long in Sazi. There wasn't a whole lot to be done. Hundreds of prayer cloths were tied around rocks and stakes all the way up the mountain, but God had failed here. "Here." Jin's hand on my knee pulled me back. He was holding the strip of red cloth up to me. I realized it was a Shima. "Better if no one sees your face." "Is that how you got a shirt?" I asked. "You took it off someone's clothesline on your way out of town?" He nodded ever so slightly. "Well, you were putting on one hell of a show with the Buraki. I needed to get out of there before the army came looking. You were too good a distraction to waste." I was a distraction. I riffled around in the bag that was still strapped over my shoulder. The shirt I'd grabbed off the floor of the boy's bedroom was at the top. The one I'd meant to give him when I stupidly thought he'd needed my help. I balled it up and flung it at him. Jin caught it deftly with his free hand. "Stealing is a sin, you know." I snatched the Shima from him and started tying it, wincing as my fingers brushed the spot where Nagib's gun had smashed across my cheek. "And that shirt doesn't fit you well." Jin paused for a moment before peeling off the shirt he'd been wearing. "Is drinking yourself under the table one, too?" He tugged on the new shirt as I busied myself wrapping my face against the sun that was still rising. "If I say no," I said, tucking the fabric into place, "will you be buying?" My second drink burned less than the first one on the way down, but it still wasn't close to burning out the aching hollow space in my chest. "Tamid," I blurted out the name I'd been biting back since we sat down. "My friend, he got shot through the leg. What do you reckon will happen to him?"
"Not a clue,"
It was dark and the drunk genie. Busy, too. Full of men with no minds to go to and nothing to do but drink and tell their stories to painted girls. It wasn't even noon, and this whole town was drunk, or well on its way. And I was helping. Jin's hat was tugged low over his face, concealing as much of it as he could manage.
Could be they'll leave him alive. Could be they'll shoot him in the head to finish the job. You never know with your Sultan's army. But there's nothing you can do about it now. You already left him.
I wanted to tell him that I didn't, that he took me away. But we both knew that wasn't true.
Only way to find out for sure would be to ride back into town and get matching bullets straight through our heads. I hear that's the latest style in Isman.
Well, it's the last thing they'd expect, I joked lamely. But I knew I wasn't going back. I'd spent near 17 years planning on leaving, with my mother, and then on my own, and now I'd finally made it out. After all that time scraping and saving and fighting, dragging the horizon closer by my fingernails, one loosey at a time, I was on my way. The warm rush I was feeling wasn't all from the drink.
So where to now?
My foot started tapping on the ground. I'd spent years in one place, and now that I'd finally started moving, it was hard to stop. The bar girl came over. Jin stopped her as she started to slosh liquor into his glass.
Leave the bottle.
He slid a coin across the table to her. She held the coin up to the faint light before tossing it back on the table.
This isn't real money.
I picked it up. Sure enough, the round piece of metal was about the same size as a luzi, but it was too thin and printed with a sun instead of the profile of the Sultan.
My mistake.
Jin kept his head low so the brim of his hat hid his foreign features as he gave her a new coin. The girl bit it before sauntering back to the bar. Jin propped his elbows on the table and filled my glass back up to the brim. He was favoring the shoulder he hadn't taken a bullet to. I watched the strain across his back, his shirt pulling so I could see the tattoo of the sun rising over his collar. I glanced down to the coin in my palm, the same image staring up at me.
"What's the sun?" I asked.
"That might be a bit of an existential question 4 drinks in," Jin said, putting the bottle down, his shirt shifting again to eclipse the tattoo.
3 drinks, and I meant that one.
I reached across the table and tugged his collar down so I could see the tattoo on his chest. My knuckles grazed his heartbeat. I let go quickly, realizing I was too close to start undressing him.
"It's a symbol for luck," Jin said.
He pulled his collar back up, but I could still see the edge of the ink over his heart.
"It's on your foreign coin."
He raised his eyebrows at the accusation in my tone, but I figured he knew what I meant. The sun was printed on what I figured was a Sichuan coin, which meant it was a national symbol. Jin might have been born here, but he'd told me he was raised in Sichuan. It seemed awfully patriotic for a mercenary to have his country's sun tattooed over his heart.
"Why did you come back for me?"
I leaned toward him, trying to unravel him.
"You could have made a clean getaway."
There was a tug at his mouth as he leaned in to whisper conspiratorially.
"I needed a fast horse."
He was so close I could smell the alcohol on him. So close he might have kissed me. He seemed to realize that at the same moment I did and pulled away.
"Besides, I owe you. When you caught the Buraki, it drew every person in the last county away from that goddamn factory just long enough for me to get in and send it up.
I've been trying to do that for weeks now. I was getting mighty low on money.
So that was why he'd been in the pistol pit that night.
And all of it just to blow up some factory in the dead end to nowhere? The biggest weapons factory in the country, and by extension, the world.
The world?
I'd never known that. It didn't seem possible. It's not hard when you can't build something half the size of it anywhere else without it getting torn down by first beings.
My head was feeling light from the alcohol, and in the dark of the bar I was struggling to put his words together.
What do you mean, torn down?
Jin paused, drink halfway to his mouth.
Come on, desert girl. How long had it been since you'd seen a first being before the Buraki came into town? Magic and metal don't mix well.
We're killing it, but it's fighting back. The Buraki screams lit up my memories.
Most other countries can make anything on a small scale, including weapons. But a few tried to build factories just like yours hundreds of years ago. The living earth itself rebelled. There's a valley in Sicha that's called Fool's Grave. It used to be a town. They'd built a cannery there. Legend says they were open about a month before the first beings who lived in the earth had enough and tore apart the ground under the town and flooded the ruins. The same thing happened everywhere. So after a while, folks stopped building factories. Except in Miraji. Your first beings are the only ones who seem to put up with it.
And what makes us so special?
Jin shrugged. Maybe it's because the desert's magic already comes out of fire and smoke instead of growing living things. Or because the earth here is already dead. But the fact is, your country is at the crossroads between the east, where guns were born, and the west, where they're waging a war of empires. And it's the only one in the world that can build weapons on a massive scale. This desert is valuable. Why do you think the Galen are here?
So we're just one giant weapons factory to them?
The notion was unsettling. Jin poured himself another drink. And there are a lot of countries who aren't very pleased by your sultan providing the Galen with weapons to invade them, if they got it into their heads to try.
So which one of those countries are you blowing up factories for?
I prodded the sun on his chest.
The Sichian symbol.
Jin raised his glass in a mock toast. Maybe I'm just a pacifist.
I clinked my glass to his.
You have an awful lot of guns for a pacifist. The words were met by a wry turn of his mouth. And you're too smart for someone who doesn't know nearly enough about her own country.
We drank. As my empty glass hit the table, something crashed in the corner of the room. I jumped. A chair had knocked to the ground. Its owner, a man in a dirty green shima, was on his feet, facing another man who was lounging back, both feet propped up. A game of cards spread out on the table. A pretty girl was between them, molding herself up against the standing man, whispering in his ear until he folded back into his chair. The sitar player started up again in his corner, and someone laughed high and clear, breaking the tension. The thought hit me all of a sudden. Did you blow up the mines, too? If Sicha wanted to cut off our weapons, then it made sense to cut off the supply of metal, too. Factories could be rebuilt. Collapsed mines were harder.
Here?
He actually looked surprised.
No. I heard it was an accident.
Why should I believe you? Is Jin even your real name?
Well, around here they call me the Eastern Snake. But you know that. He looked up at me from under the brim of his hat. Blue-eyed bandit. The shock made me pull back. Jin's face split into a grin at my surprise.
You knew who I was?
I asked, sounding a little breathless.
In Dustwalk?
Your eyes aren't exactly inconspicuous, Jin said.
You knew who I was and you wouldn't take me with you?
The frightened, humiliated feeling of returning to the empty store rushed back in.
Why?
Because you shouldn't go to Isman. He settled back in his chair. No matter how well you can take care of yourself with a gun out here, the city'll tear you apart.
I wouldn't be alone, I said. My mother's sister lives in Isman. That's where I'm headed.
Do you even know how to get there?
I shrugged. How are you getting there?
I'm not, he said simply, catching me by surprise. I reached back, trying to remember if he'd ever said he was. It just seemed like he must have been. There was another crash, and I reached for a gun that wasn't there as Jin turned around, already tensing for a fight. The card table across the room was overturned, and the man in the green shima was on the ground, clutching a bloody nose. I had a moment of distraction to decide. If I stayed with Jin, I wasn't getting to Isman. He'd left me behind once already, and he could just as easily do it again. Besides, we only had one buraki. I fished out the bottle Tamid had given me. The pills crushed up easily in my fingers, and I put them straight into Jin's drink. My fingers were back around my own glass by the time the fight got broken up and Jin faced me again. I watched him drain his drink. Chapter 8 I'd never seen so many people in my whole life as there were outside the train station in Juniper City. On my left, a man with a gray beard shouted through the steam rising from his stall as he shoved more skewers of meat into the fire. On the other side, a woman dressed in gold and bells sang with every step. The sound of someone preaching carried over the ruckus. A holy father stood on a small platform, his hands raised, the twin circular tattoos of each palm facing the crowd. The rise and fall of his voice as he preached reminded me of Tamid. A shot of guilt went through me, thinking of my friend. I'd left him bleeding in the sand to keep myself alive. The Holy Father dipped his hands at the end of each prayer, blessing the crowd huddled around his feet, forgiving us our sins. A stream of bodies pushed me past him, through the tail end of the souk, under the soot-stained archway. Women carrying bundles on their heads slipped by me. Men dragging trunks twice their size crowded me forward. I moved with the crush of bodies into the shade of the station, stumbling as I took in the sight before me. I'd heard about trains, but I hadn't imagined this. The huge black and gold beast stretched out across the station like some monster out of the old stories, breathing black smoke into the dirty glass dome. The crowd jostled toward it. Ticket? A man in a pale yellow vest and cap reached out his hand, looking bored. I tried to keep my fingers from clinging to the ticket as I handed it over. It had taken me 2 days to get from Sazi to Juniper City, even on the buraki. It hadn't exactly helped that the compass I'd stolen from Jin while he was unconscious, along with half his supplies, was broken and steered me the wrong way, making me wait for sunrise to find my way again. I'd reached the city in time to get ripped off selling the buraki for half of what it was worth. But half was better than nothing. And more importantly, it was enough to buy a ticket straight to Isman. Seeing the name printed in black ink on yellow paper
made it seem like just another story in my fingers, ready to slip away at any second. I'd hidden the ticket under the mattress of the room I'd rented and checked it over and over again until I decided it was easier to just keep it against my skin. The ticket man frowned at me, and I ran my palms over my new clothes self-consciously. I didn't pass for a boy quite so easily in daylight, but I had to try anyhow. The ugly bruise on my cheek had gone down to a yellow-green that just peeked over the red shima, and my new clothes were loose in the right places. What was left of my money and some spare Zichian coins and the battered compass that Jin had left jangling around the saddlebags were stuffed into the wraps around my middle that hid my waist. All it'd take was someone looking for too long to see through my disguise. But even a poor imitation of a boy was better than a girl traveling on her own. I tugged the edge of the shirt where it covered the new gun I'd bought with the Buraki money. I wouldn't be able to fight my way onto the train, but I might be able to outrun men in yellow caps if I needed to. I could be about to find out. "This ticket is first class." He shook it at me like a mother wagging a finger. "Oh," I said, because I didn't know what he was talking about. I made my fingers go still. "Yes?" For a second I was sure he was going to accuse me of stealing the ticket. Whatever first class was, I was guessing I didn't look it. Especially with my busted-up cheek and the cut above my eyebrow. "You need to head to the front of the train for first class." He shoved the ticket back at me and pointed farther up the metal beast, somewhere past the churning crowds. "Oh," I said again. I took the ticket back and pressed through the crush of people, narrowly dodging a man wheeling a covered cage from which I could hear squawking, even over the din. The man who'd sold me the ticket had asked if I wanted a compartment to myself, and I'd said yes. It had seemed safer, and I didn't think anything of handing over the money he asked. Now I wondered if I might have more than 20 fusa to my name if I'd been smarter. I saw a roped-off area where folks in fine-spun kalats and colorful shimas waited, holding yellow tickets like mine. My own clothes were new, but they were just desert clothes. My whole life was in a bag slung over my shoulder. Not even much of a life. Extra bullets, a change of clothes. More like survival. Everybody else looked like they could be carrying a dozen lives in their heavily loaded trunks. I caught a man with a braided beard giving me a once-over out of the corner of his eye, and I got the feeling I knew what the pair of girls behind me were stifling laughs over. I wasn't sure if the man who took my ticket was raising his eyebrows at my appearance, or if that was just where they sat on his forehead. He took the ticket all the same, tearing it neatly before handing it back. My neck burning, I climbed the metal steps as fast as I could manage without looking like I was getting away with something. I'd never seen anything like the inside of the train either. A long corridor with carpets the color of new blood shot in a straight line through the carriage, polished metal doors opening off it, each with glass windows hung with red curtains. And I thought Tamid's family had money. The giggling girls pushed past me with a huff of air through their muslin veils. The man trailing behind them spat a sharp-tongued, "Excuse me," that made me think he wasn't excusing anyone at all. I ducked my head and wound up looking at the colorful hems of their kalats sweeping across the thick carpet and down the hall. I stayed a few feet behind the group until I found a compartment whose number matched the one inked onto my ticket. I opened the door as carefully as the time I got dared to find out if the snake behind the school was dead or just sleeping. Turned out my mother knew how to get out snake poison. But this wasn't something she would have known anything about.
I locked the compartment doors safely shut and folded myself into the bed, pulling off my shima.